This is the place, said Brigham Young, about this podcast. That is also what he did. As he climbed Ensign Peak or the valley or wherever they were. No, sorry. This is the place monument's not on Ensign Peak. That place where they did it. Then he went whoop, 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 like you just did.
Yes.
Nothing I just said made any sense.
Yes.
But we don't do that at This Week in Mormons. We're here to entertain, not provide elucidation.
Let me entertain you.
Oh, they climbed Ensign
Peak.
Was it when he climbed Ensign Peak that he pointed to the ground and said, the temple will be right there? Maybe that's what it was.
No, it's when he got up and he pointed to the ground and said, I, Macarena.
I will not move from this place until the Lord has shown me what to do.
What a great video that was, man. That was the preparation day movie of choice.
I love the Mountain of the Lord. And when we found a copy of it on my mission, it was the only video we had in English. So we just loved it.
I will not move.
And because it gave us something to show Africans, honestly. Like, we taught a lot of them, but we rarely had media to share with them. So it was
really great. Yeah.
So it was great.
You're like, hey, here's a video about it. Beards and Jesus.
I believe I've told this story before, but I watched it one night, and on the way back from my companion, I was like, Elder, I just love you, man. I felt so wonderful after watching that film. I was just bouncing around Valencia, just as happy as could be.
Was he like, quit being weird?
A little bit, yeah. He was kind of concerned.
He's like, why are you the way you are, Jeff? Why are you this way?
Filled with the spirit of joy and love.
Well, good work.
Is that okay with you?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's nice. Jeff, yeah. How have you been? I feel like I haven't talked to you in days.
I know. It's been very quiet on our friendship front for the past week or so. It's made me wonder.
We even normally budget an hour to catch up. 5 minutes.
Are you going through your annual withdrawal from me? Your intentional stepping back, stepping away from our friendship?
No, I only do that when you break my trust.
Because I'm sorry about that. It's been like a year. But you better get with it, because in 2 weeks, we are going on a journey. So.
Oh, yeah. So check this out, people. We're flying out to D.C., renting a car. Driving, I don't know why I have to fly to D.C. and then drive out. I should just fly and meet you in Cincinnati or something.
Cincinnati would not be the right place, but sure, sure. Because you want to experience.
We're driving up to Cedar Point, Ohio.
Uh-huh, in Sandusky, Ohio, yes.
For roller coasters.
Yeah, and whatever else is on the way. Who's to say what we'll do? I mean, between D.C. and there, we could go to Kirtland or Cleveland or things in Pittsburgh.
We tried to reassemble the Magician's Alliance. We really did.
Sort of. And, you know, it's not too bad because we're actually going to be coming up here next week on the one-year anniversary of the beginning of my visit to Missouri and our epic road trip. So it's good timing.
Man, the time hop notifications are starting to come through. I'm getting reminded of all that stuff that's happening.
So it won't be too bad. I mean, I'll have to look at my journal and see the wonderful things I wrote.
Jeff, this should be an annual thing.
I will never forget sitting in your car, parked in the mountains of Alberta, at what time was it? It was like 9 p.m., but it was still light outside, and we're getting ready to go to bed in a teepee, writing in the journal, making sure the food was stashed in the car so bears wouldn't find us.
Those were happy days. And then sleeping almost an hour and a half that night as we shivered.
Sleeping on permafrost. It was great.
Oh, that was wonderful.
Anyway,
I remember.
To answer your initial question, I'm doing just super.
Thanks for asking.
Nothing wonderful going on. Just been a very chill week, you know?
I feel like you're so much less interesting now that you're married. Do you feel that way?
Well, this is what happens. I'm married, and when I have the job, it's not as exciting. Sometimes I forget. There was an international development conference thing this week, but it wasn't that great, so that was okay. And it's a slow week because most USAID contractors are very quiet leading up to a holiday like Memorial Day.
Are you sure this isn't your life now, that you're just a boring person?
No, I'm not. I'm not 100% certain of that, actually. I don't know who to blame. I'm hesitant to blame the wife, so I'm not going to blame her.
No, it's not her fault. I feel like she's just facilitating what's always been just under the surface.
Well, I mean, this time last year, I was spending a lot of time by myself, just watching Angels games in my bedroom, so.
Well, markedly better than last year.
It might be a step up.
But I feel like we always had, I'd be like, what'd you do? And you're like, oh, There I was, getting ice cream, blood and urine everywhere. I saved a man with my one hand.
Thank you, Ulysses S. Grant.
What a great reenactor he was. But,
soaked in the feces and the blood.
We had, oh, that was great.
If you don't know what we're talking about, everyone, listen to a show from about a year ago, and you'll...
When Jeff was out here, we went to a Civil War reenactment, and the Ulysses S. Grant reenactor was very graphic in the treatment of soldiers.
Well, it was just that he kept going back to the urine and the blood and the muck stuff. He just kept referencing it every time he talked. It was like saying,
but that was your life. You always had these exciting things going on, even though 90% of the time I was watching Angels games and reading books. The 10% of the time you go out, amazing. And well, now, yeah, with a wife, when you go out, you like your wife, and you just go get food and come home.
I want you to try to tell me what, okay, but you need to clearly discover what adventures I was having and I'm not anymore. I would love to know.
Jeff, I can't say.
Go back and look in your journal when you write about me. And find out.
I'll say that. Jeff, we went to a pirate-themed cruise dinner tonight. Yeah, I bet you haven't done that in a while.
No, I haven't. It's been about 6 years.
When was the last time you went to Sevastopol? When was the last time you traveled by train?
By train? Well, did you count the metro?
No.
Oh, because if it was the metro, it was yesterday.
Jeff, I feel like this is...
Hold on. When was the last time you traveled by train?
About 2 months ago.
Yeah, okay. And it's probably a little bit less than that for me, or about the same, because I went to Denmark, so there.
Oh, and you took the train to Malmo.
I took the train to Malmo. I took the metro around. I got around. You know, I did my thing.
Okay.
But speaking of, I did run into one of our dear mutual Ukrainian friends last week, so that was awesome.
Katya.
That was a huge part of last week.
And Mikhail.
That was sweet. We had a BYU Political Affairs Society get-together thing. They tried to make it a national conference this year, but somewhere along the line, they decreased the demand somehow because it was much more poorly attended than in years past. But I'm sitting there talking to good old Katya, a girl that you baptized on your mission, Al.
Yeah.
Finds me with her husband, and they're in D.C. for the summer.
Did you recognize them, or did she recognize you?
I didn't. I would have recognized her if I would have seen her, but I didn't see anybody in the crowd. I was talking to other people. And then she came up, and I just joyously said, Katya, and I hugged her and raised her in my arms.
Because I almost don't recognize her anymore. She's like, well, because I baptized, like, I was her missionary when they got baptized at, like, when she was 13, and now she's 23 or something.
Older, yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. But you've seen her more recently than I have. I had not seen her since Ukraine in all this time. I mean, you've seen her.
Amazing.
Idaho a few times.
I'm looking at a picture of you, me, and them right now, Jeff. What a time.
So anyways, there was the highlight, and I almost didn't go to this BYU thing. I wasn't really feeling it, because every year I would leave feeling defeated and useless.
Really?
Well, you go to this, and some guy from Congress speaks, then they do breakout sessions, which are sort of networking sessions, but not really. There's no one really of value saying, hey, I know people who are looking for better employment opportunities, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so I'd almost always go and be like, yeah, so I'm a schmuck, and my career stinks compared to everybody else. You know, whatever. So, but I'm so glad I went, because I ran into someone wonderful. And then they kicked us out before the breakout sessions because the speaker went on too long. So it was just over. It was kind of funny. So there you go. That was my exciting time.
Jeff, you have done wonderful things.
Other things, I've made my wife watch all of the Marvel movies so we can finally see Iron Man 3 at some point. Great.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, found Blue Bell ice cream on sale for $1.99 a pint. Bought 4 pints. Ate myself silly.
So they sell that up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, they do. Also, I went to Portland for about 4 days.
Yeah, was that for work? It was for work.
That was great, yeah. So I went up there, had a big conference up there, and then trained into downtown a few nights and really ate some great food. I found an Australian meat pie place.
Okay.
Incredible. Very tasty.
I've heard very good things about Portland.
Also, I went to the straw and the, or the straw, salt and straw, which is an ice cream place up there.
Okay.
And they have flavors like pear and blue cheese.
Stop it.
Or strawberry balsamic vinaigrette.
Is it flavored like blue cheese, or do you actually have chunks of blue cheese in
you
the ice cream?
It's pear flavored ice cream with chunks of blue cheese.
I could actually see that being good in a weird way.
It was delicious. I enjoyed it very much. I bought a pint.
I enjoy interesting ice creams. That's great. Good for you.
Well, it's the whole story of it. It was like an hour long wait. I was surrounded by, it was some prom thing going on, and like these girls were there being very loud and obnoxious, and then when they got in trouble, they started calling me daddy, which turned the whole crowd against me. I thought it was very clever of them, but frustrating to the bearded man who's like, what? Why are you? No. Sort of awful.
And it looks like you hit up the famed Voodoo Donuts, so.
Yeah, I didn't go in. I mean, a donut's a donut. I wasn't going to stand in line for an hour.
There's apparently a great biscuit-based place there, too. I saw it once on some television. It might have been Triple D. It might have been something else.
But I enjoy Portland. It was fun to walk around.
Was that your first time in Portland?
No, I've been there a couple times.
Oh, of course you have.
I love the Riverwalk.
Al, name for me a decent-sized American, like, metropolitan area that you've never been to.
Let's see. Any of the southern deep south states. Okay. Jackson, Mississippi. Never been there.
Jackson, Mississippi is a hole. I wouldn't even call it a metropolitan area. It's awful.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
No, I've been to Atlanta. I just haven't been out of the airport.
Yeah, well, by that measure, I've also been to Atlanta dozens of times. It's a Delta hub. I mean.
And that's probably it. Everywhere else I've been.
I know you have. That's why I long for adventure with you to somewhere where you've never experienced.
Jeff, I'll send you pictures, and you can show them to your wife.
Thank you. Well, maybe when we go up on our roller coaster trip, just for funsies, we'll drive over to Toledo just to see it.
Yes, I'm in. Let's do it.
I think they have a Del Taco there, so that could really be a two-for-one for me. Be beautiful. Oh.
So.
Yes, I will make you go to the Del.
So let's do this, Jeff.
Yeah, okay. I guess we can talk about content and hope you all listen to this over Memorial Day for our stateside listeners. This should be all you do. And everyone's going to Duck Beach, I guess. I don't know. It's not a thing in my life.
Wait, anymore. Are they?
Well, not married people, but, you know, the singles still go. It's a thing. Happens all the time.
It's Duck Beach. That's like Vegas for the East Coast.
No, that's called it. That's Atlantic City.
Oh, I'm thinking of Branson.
There you, Branson.
With the Mormons and the Yakov Smirnoff.
Does Branson have a lot of Mormons?
Well, it's got the Osmonds. What more do you need?
They perform there?
Oh, yeah, Jeff. They made this town.
I want to go to Branson, Missouri, just because it became famous because somebody decided Branson, Missouri needed to be famous. And that's the only reason.
I don't know the whole story on it, but it is fascinating.
Well, it's got there's a good theme park there, so.
They do really good work.
I'd be into it. We are sad to announce, and most of you, I'm sure, are all aware of this, that this is going to be not our last episode. But we wanted to announce that Sister Monson, of course, passed away a couple of days ago. And most of you have probably seen this throughout the interwebs and stuff. But it is a sad, sad time for our beloved prophet and for the church at large. So this was Frances Beverly Monson.
She was a dear heart.
I don't feel like I knew Sister Monson very well.
Yeah, you don't feel like you knew her?
Well, I mean, not on a personal level, but you know, I mean, she clearly opted to not have a very like a public persona. I mean, I know she turned down speaking engagements and things along those lines, which of course stands in contrast to Sister Hinckley, who was very active in the community and doing stuff, and as such, people felt like they knew her better.
So
I didn't really know Sister Monson.
Well, I feel like I knew Sister Hinckley.
Yep.
Right? I feel Sister Monson I know just because President Monson is very complimentary of his wife, right?
Very
he speaks
fond
of her,
her
often. But the man, I don't know. I think the hardest part of this from our perspective here, I'm sure Sister Monson is happy as a clam. But poor President Monson, who's left behind here. I mean, that's like, what's that like? I can't imagine a more lonely feeling place than the president of the church, right? You're have this huge work, and your companion, who has been with you through it all, is gone now, and it's just like, all right, keep being cheerful and happy and doing what you do, and brightening the lives of everyone you touch. While going through this exceptionally difficult pain, right?
And she was there for so long. I mean, President Monson has been in the 12 for, you know, ages.
He was called into the 12 at what, 32?
Something like that. He was super young. So, And yeah, it's got to be hard. I remember how much it seemed that President Hinckley, it seemed like he lost a little bit of his spark after Sister Hinckley passed. You could just tell. Yeah. He was still doing fine, and he was getting older. But yeah, it was pretty evident that he was not as pleased as he once was. That's got to be so hard. I mean, that's your eternal companion. You get to see him again. You have a testimony of that, a knowledge of it. Doesn't make it any easier to have to, you know, trudge through the remaining your remaining time in mortality without that individual. It's not easy. And I don't see President Monson remarrying or anything. I would doubt that would happen. So.
Oh, my gosh. That would be the most intimidating date of all time.
We'll talk to Kristen Oakes.
Yeah.
Weren't they set up for just like a mutual friend to put them together and they dated all discreetly or something like that?
Dallin, I know somebody you would love.
Exactly. Just like that. Some factoids, though, about Sister Monson. She met President Monson in 1944. President Monson saw her at a University of Utah Hello Day dance. They met at a dance. I think they were teenagers of some kind because she just passed away. She was 85, and this was in 1944. So was it 69 years ago? There you do the math. So 16, right?
Yeah. I'm with you.
60-some-odd years ago? Whatever. So they met when they were young. They didn't get married until October of 1948 in the Salt Lake Temple.
Why?
They did their thing.
Why so long?
Well, my guess is they were teenagers and President Monson had to, like, you know, go do his thing.
What does that mean?
Well, he was a military boy.
Oh, yeah.
There was a war of sorts. You might be familiar with a war that we had.
Well, that Frances Monson, what a sweetheart.
So that happened. She was the one that was very into musicality and stuff, and that's a... We can easily assume that that's a big reason why President Monson, we know he's a big lover of musicals. He cites them frequently when he gives conference talks and the like. So well, there it is. She was a quiet one, didn't want a lot of attention. They said she'd been hospitalized for many weeks. No cause of death disclosed. They said it was just incidents of age. I don't know.
So she has her funeral is tomorrow, right? Thursday.
Thursday, the 23rd. The funeral is going to be at noon Mountain Standard Time.
It's broadcast live.
Yeah, so they released some more details. TV. So the public is welcome to come to the funeral. It's going to be in the Tabernacle in Salt Lake. Doors will open at 10:30. They will be giving out tickets, which just seems weird to me, but I guess it's necessary and just for logistics. They'll be passed out at all four gates of the Tabernacle. Once it's filled up, then you can go into overflow at the conference center or the church building auditorium. And then, as you said, Al, there are going to be funeral services will be broadcast on KSL, LDS.org, KSL, BYU TV.
How interesting, too. In lieu of flowers, the Monson family is requesting that donations be made to the General Missionary Fund.
Which is fine.
That's an interesting charity to pick, right?
Well, what else are they going to pick? Like flowers for widows?
No, I'd pick you missionaries. Support yourself. Go earn your own money.
You're a very compassionate individual. This is what you're known for, Al.
It's true.
People love you for your compassion. So it's sad, and I've been
watching a lot of Celebrity Apprentice where I feel like a lot of good charities are represented. But what could be more good than, I guess, the gospel of everlasting life? So yeah, I guess that makes sense. All right.
So
maybe on par with the Red Cross, that's fine.
Maybe I'll tune in tomorrow if I have some time. I mean, this will be at 2 o'clock my time. Maybe I'll pop on and see if.
You're a very gracious man, Jeff. I don't see want to what to watch. You.
Just to see what happens, just out of respect. I just feel for President Monson. That's hard.
Well, it's got to be. I mean, yeah. Well, like you said, I just can't imagine a harder position to be in.
And I forget, we don't have to get too personal if you don't want to, Al, but I mean, I forget. I mean, I've met some of your grandparents, but not all of them. Are all of your grandparents living? I don't know.
I have two living.
So the main ones live. Yeah, and my grandfather passed away in December, and he's been my only grandfather. And so I can see that toll that's taken on my grandma when you're with someone for, my grandpa was almost 94, and my grandma's almost 90, and just to... It's hard when you're with them for that long. They have a hard time wanting to function after that.
One of my very good friends, her grandpa just died this week, and we were talking about this exact thing, where she's like, yeah, they had a routine. I mean, they would go hiking 3 times a week, and they'd go and do this, and they'd do that. And like, they had just things that they did consistently, and that's how they found joy in life, right?
Yeah.
And you take that one away, I mean, hiking alone is just not nearly as fun. And what do you... I mean, what do you do? What do you do when you upset that whole balance and the thing that you know so well? It's an awful place, awful situation to be put in.
And lastly,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to
move away from this.
You can move away. It's just our hearts are with you, Monsons, and the church is with you. So
I was just going to pile on the bad news with the tornado drama in Oklahoma.
Yeah, that hasn't been very fun, has it?
So I was planning on taking a big road trip this week, and I'm driving back out to Salt Lake, and so I was going to go down and visit my friends in Arkansas and then shoot up through Oklahoma because I'd never seen the memorial they put there after the bombing a couple of years ago. And I've always...
Almost 20 years ago, but yeah.
Was it really?
I think it was in 95, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, because I remember following that, and I've always been very interested in terrorism and like just terrorism research and stuff while I was in college. It's fascinating to me. And so I've been meaning to go out and see this. So I was going to drive up through that and then continue out onto Salt Lake. Well, now I know I'm trying to figure out what to do because just a couple of days ago, there was an F5 tornado, like Twister Hollywood movie style tornado, that ripped through Oklahoma City, touched parts of the city proper, Jeff, as well as suburbs.
Yes, but not downtown, but yes.
And and so, like, I mean, schools were leveled. People were not all prepared, which is shocking to me because being in the Midwest, I feel like we take this stuff pretty seriously. I would have expected more response from the people that were involved, but there were... there were people that were caught unprepared. It just did an awful, awful work out there. And so everybody's out there trying to clean up the aftermath of this. And I don't want to feel like I'm a natural disaster tourist. This is kind of weird to me. And so I'm trying to, I don't know, like, puts them in a weird situation. But the Mormon angle here, the church, as they do with their helping hands, is responding and doing a good work and helping get that all cleaned up. I know a lot of my friends have gone out there to clean up. I don't know. When things like this happen, I wish that the church had, like, a response person that, you know, if you wanted to head out there, you could just call them up and they'd say, yeah, we'll put you on this team. Come on out here and do this.
Well, they might get to that point. After Hurricane Sandy, it slowly became very tightly coordinated, but it took some time.
But why not have like the person so that as people are coming in? I mean, typically the way it works right now is you just hop in the car and drive and hope you run into people, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, as far as I know, the church doesn't have an actual, like, a designee for just the disaster spokesperson, point person to just boom, do it. Whenever there's a problem, they send them out there and they run point on everything that gets done. That could be useful to just jump in and
do it. Now, here's my thought on it too, is typically, you know, when something like this happens, I excuse myself from helping a lot of times because I just say, well, they've got, you know, the Red Cross is there, they've got their people, they've got their stuff, and if I went, I'd probably just be more in the way, which is probably true, right? But it's the same as when, like, you know, you have a friend whose mom dies or something, right? And we tend to, like, excuse ourselves from offering sympathy or anything because we don't want to sound trite or you don't want to do something. When really, I mean, just showing up makes all the difference. I mean, even if it is trite, even if they don't, can I help with anything? Is there anything I can do? No. Everybody's going to say, they're going to say no. But the fact that you put your hand out and try is the key, right? So maybe we should be showing up to these things. Like,
maybe
just for the people of Oklahoma, like, I wish they could tell or know how meaningful their suffering is to us.
Well,
without, yes. I don't know. I don't know a good way to do this.
Interesting building on this. Actually, the article elaborates. This is in the Deseret News, talking about some of the church's involvement. And they make a point to say we don't just rush in with our helping hands vests and start moving things around. Right now, there are specially trained teams in the area searching for survivors and to stabilize stuff. And really, they say the best thing we can do right now is prepare what we've brought in as far as, you know, relief elements, but stay out of the way. Also, the church has a representative on VOAD, which is the Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. And we have a representative on that, and then they tell that representative what to do, and then he coordinates with priesthood leaders as far as what can provide. I think the main thing is the church doesn't like to swoop in and try to be its own, you know, independent actor in this. We're trying to orchestrate and coordinate with other relief groups, because of course we're not the only people at the party.
Well, yeah, but we are big people.
We are big, but that's the point. You might not want to just show up. I'm sure once it's organized, you can show up and be put to work, but I think the last thing they want is just people descending upon the area, taking their own initiative. But you don't want to take your own initiative.
We take our own initiative.
And say, what can I do?
And that's what we say.
Yes. Very good. If any of you get a chance to do this, it would be great. I was very impressed by the church's efforts in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. I'm down in D.C., but I saw countless groups of people weekend after weekend.
Did you help?
I never got to go up. I'm a loser. But I knew many people who went up weekend after weekend. I had a roommate who went up four consecutive weekends in a row, just kept going up to New York, doing the thing, sleeping in the church building there, and then coming back.
You should have gone.
I should have. Really should have. But I did not do it.
Anyway.
But my hat goes off to those who did. So we can do great things when we... church organization is amazing to me, honestly. The stuff we're able to put together and help out with, despite our own flaws. Still.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm going to move on here real quick. So this is really interesting. This is on thinkprogress.org, so take that as you will, right? But
there's what does that mean? Well, how am I supposed to take it?
It's a leftist website, basically. So
I see.
But let's see what we can fish out the facts from the spin, if we will. But basically, there's a GOP nominee now in Virginia, where I live. So this is going to be fun for me deciding how to vote. He's running for the attorney general. Virginia's had a number of primaries recently for all this stuff. Lieutenant governor, my bad, not attorney general. Anyway, he was on Glenn Beck's TV show. Yeehaw. And Glenn Beck said that this is Glenn Beck's fault in some ways as well. Glenn Beck said he couldn't understand how he and Harry Reid, a fellow Mormon, the Senate minority leader, for those of you not up on American politics, can share the same religion yet have such different policy views. Then this guy, Jackson, this man running, E.W. Jackson, reasoned that the Senate majority leader, Senate majority leader must not actually believe his faith. He says, quote, "I think some of the people who claim to be Mormon or claim to be this or that, that's all they're doing. They're just claiming. They don't believe it or feel it in their hearts." Now, this upsets me for two reasons. One, this is just my own political thing, but it insinuates that people must pass a religion test to be viable in public office, which I don't believe they should. So that's one thing. It's no one's business but the individual what their religious deal is. But then two, anybody who lives in D.C. and is aware of Harry Reid or has been in a ward with Harry Reid knows that he's a devout member of the church. And you can be a devout member of the church and be a, let's face it, a moderate Democrat like Harry Reid, or be a devout member of the church and be, or pretend to be, a far-right ideologue like Glenn Beck. You can be both. Or both can be Mormon, rather.
Well, this used to be much more common, say, 50 years ago, right?
Sure.
I feel like the parties weren't quite as polarized then, but now it's become something where people almost expect you to be a Republican if you're a member of the church, which I don't exactly understand. I mean, there's social issues that that are clearly more in line on the conservative side with the church, right?
Yeah, but I think there are also social issues that are more in line with the Democratic side.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, welfare-y stuff, things along those lines are often... Well, you can pick and choose for both parties. You really can.
Yeah, but I feel like there's people that just have the expectation. I feel like it's the same expectation where you just expect me to have seen The Princess Bride if I'm Mormon. Or you expect me to enjoy green jello, so to speak, as it were, if I'm Mormon. When really, and I like this about our church, we're becoming a more individual, more of a grouping of individuals and individual thought than we are just a big conglomerate that moves uniformly.
Yeah, well, we're becoming... We're slowly becoming a bit more heterogeneous.
Right. We're
absolutely.
We're
more hetero. And President Uchtdorf even talked about this in one of his conference talks this past April, about the value of us being very pluralistic in the church and being individuals and coming from different walks of life and different belief systems outside of just our faith.
So what we're saying is, hey, EW, appreciate your views.
I'm saying, hey, EW, regardless of any party affiliation I would have, and this is funny because I just said no one should have to pass a religion test, but now because of this guy saying this, it makes me say, why would I vote for you when you could be that much of a schmuck about my own religion and assume that it belongs to one side or the other? So, Virginia, I call upon you to think about this as you vote. Will you vote for E.W. Jackson?
We choose you. Now, you put this up on our Facebook, and there's somebody that knows him well. Says he is not doing, it's not his fault. You're treating him unfairly.
He's an amazing man. He will be demonized. The funny thing is this woman who comments, Roxanne Lane Christley, fair points, but what she was talking all about, like, the left ruining people. And she agrees that Harry Reid is pretending to be a Mormon. He's a disgrace to the LDS faith. This man will not cower to the liberal left. Okay.
He won't?
Apparently, no, I mean EW. I don't even think Harry Reid has cowered to the liberal left. Honestly, how do you become the Senate majority leader and actually be pro-life as a Democrat? That's not an easy thing to accomplish. So hats off to him, honestly.
Well done.
Not easy. Well done, young squire. That's not an easy political hand to play.
Jody, in other news, I'm moving on. Jody Arias.
We'll never say her last name correctly.
Arias. Who knows? She's a murderer. Allegedly and convicted.
No. She's been convicted. We can now say without any fear of legal repercussions.
Beyond shadow,
she is a murderer.
So she
convicted
tweeted from jail, where I guess she talks to a friend on the outside and tells him, says, "Hey, let's tweet." She said,
"Great use of time.
God's love is so great that He loves even the proud, the selfish, the arrogant, and the wicked." Dietrich F. Uchtdorf.
Okay, so she's quoting President Uchtdorf from jail.
Well, I wasn't quite sure how I feel about that, but I mean, I guess good. The words of our leaders in the gospel are there to comfort.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's true.
He does love everyone.
There is no question. But I love this article written about it where it says they're talking about her and they say, yeah. She quotes the infamous Mormon leader, Dieter Uchtdorf. How is Dieter infamous at all?
Well, you know what? The comments section below totally support you, Al, in this right here. Everyone's
what
like,
does it say?
Well, people just say that like, everyone's like, does this guy know what the word infamous means? Seriously? And I like that it's all over the place. Everyone's just like, are you serious? Uchtdorf is infamous? Where do you get your information? He's a very successful and respected former airline executive.
No, it says he is lightly respected and very successful.
Does it say that?
Yeah.
Where? I must have missed it.
The comment you're reading. He is lightly respected and very successful.
Actually, that's a really good point. I read that wrong. At least he's lightly respected. Good job.
Sometimes you don't want to be heavily respected.
But it's
that's
pretty
too much pressure.
It's a very poor usage of infamous. We're not talking about, you know, these aren't like polygamy. This is not Warren Jeffs we're dealing with here.
The infamous
Dieter.
I only know what infamous means because of the Three Amigos. That's my only source.
Really? I always know it
this
because
man,
of
infamous. That means more than famous. This man El Wapo.
No, that's not.
He's not just famous. He's more than famous.
Wouldn't that be something better, like uber famous or proto famous?
Yeah, it's sort of a satire.
Or famous.
Sort of tongue-in-cheek, this Three Amigos movie.
Famous sis. I like famous sis.
All right.
Whatever. So have you seen the Meridian, Idaho temple design? We'll do some quick filler ones here in between.
Yes, Jeff, I've seen it.
Why don't you care about temple architecture? It's fascinating.
I just
especially
don't care
for
about
a man,
architecture.
You went to the you went to the Cardston Temple with me and said it was your favorite temple after going there.
It was. It mattered. Well, this is a smaller version of it that's not nearly as well thought out.
It looks like it's almost the same size, honestly, judging by the size of the doors.
I want frescoes and mosaics.
Okay. Either way, interesting temple design. I just like that it's not some It looks like a modern update of the Cardston one, almost. Maltese cross style.
Also, it's wasted on Idaho. Idaho is full of simple people that like potatoes.
Yeah, also,
why don't you put this in some sexy New Jersey suburb or something?
It's also going to be in Meridian, which is a suburb of Boise.
Oh, gross.
I know, right? It should be somewhere better, like Moscow, Idaho. Yeah.
Yeah, or Sigurd.
Then we can say we have a temple in Moscow.
Rigby.
Tokerville.
Diggard.
Leverkin.
Oof.
We should build it in Zion National Park.
Put it in Bryce. All right, yeah, that's neat. Nice temple, Jeff.
Yeah,
good work.
Thank you. I designed it. I did.
Really nailed that one.
I worked hard on this one.
No, you found another article in The Atlantic where it talks about the Provo Temple being up on stilts while they excavate.
I love Atlantic cities, by the way. They have some great pieces.
Place matters. I feel like they're my college history professor. It's just like, place matters.
Yeah. Well, anyways, it's cool. We've seen this already, but it's nice to see something like the Atlantic.
And
actually,
this building weighs 7 million pounds.
Yeah.
How many Samoans do they have to get together to lift that up there, you think?
How many Samoans will be able to go inside of it?
1,000.
1,000.
Good work, Temple.
Anyway, it shows the people. Provo City Center shell on stilts.
Jeff, these stories are not, they're not very exciting.
These are
stories.
What we used to categorize when we used to organize the show and called them mentions.
Yeah, that's true.
And it even says, if you will look in our Trello, mentions.
I'm with you.
All right, there we go. Well, we only have a few more things to hit on today if you want. So.
It's true. The cannery closing, people are angry.
Sort of.
I feel like it's now shifted to because of constitutional infringement, now the cannery has to close. Like, people have figured out how to make this more of a story. Do you feel like that's true?
Sort of. This publication kind of has a lot of the facts wrong. This is El Dorado County, which
is not the only place I've seen this story reported again, though.
Yeah, and they keep talking about how government regulation is causing this. We don't know all the ins and outs, but the funny thing is, in this article in particular, it says that, you know, the church hasn't said anything about it. We don't know what will happen. Even though 2 weeks ago, the church talked all about the canneries and how they're not closing canneries. They are just restricting in some of them whether individuals can come and do their own canning on site.
Not a great story. But
that's
when
all
you
it
say
is.
That it's Obama taking it away, great story.
Yeah, and this article even talks about how smart Mormons go and these canneries are... It's cheap food that Mormons go and buy. The canneries, unless it's for your own food storage, for the most part, food storage is one purchase. But if you're buying everyday items, that's the bishop's storehouse. That's not for sale. That is for people on church welfare.
Well, also the cannery stuff, you can go and like.
I said you can buy it for food storage. You can buy stuff for food storage, yeah, and you can have stuff canned. But anyway, the funny thing is, as far
now,
as
do you remember the semantics of it? Are you able to buy, like, can I still go buy my dried apples and hot cocoa and can it there myself?
Well, that's
or
the,
is it the
that's
is it the fact that I'm canning like. That I'm bringing in my own peaches to can. Is that what's
been? It's been any of those things. You could buy the stuff and then can it there yourself, whatever it may be. And I think you could bring in your own fruits and stuff, too. I could imagine if there were government issues at work, it could be health code issues with having random, you know, lay citizens show up and just be in a sterile facility canning stuff. I could see that potentially being a problem if there is anything like that going on.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. So I think everyone's really grasping at straws trying to make this a bigger issue than it is. And now they're going after the orchards.
Oh, no.
Next thing you know, the church is going to close down the orange groves in Florida. It's over.
It's time they sold that. You can buy orange juice so cheap anymore.
That land will lay fallow forever.
Just buy futures of orange juice and hope they turn into a reality.
Yeah. Al, do you want to talk about modesty in children?
No.
All right, fine. I'll just reference you to an...
Well, you can. So Jeff found... We've talked about this, I feel like, the last couple of weeks.
We talked about female garments last week.
Yeah. So Jeff found a little blurb that on By Common Consent, which I've actually been enjoying them more and more.
It's a good blog. Yeah.
They're entertaining. But it's on children and immodesty. And supposedly saying that the friend is doing a disservice by telling stories about how children dress modestly. Silly? Yes. Non-issue? Yes.
But is it? I understand.
Jeff cares? Yes.
I understand the debate here, because this goes back even to photoshopping capped sleeves onto little girls in church publications. It's simply that if it's a child is before the age of accountability, then why are we, in the sense, sexualizing them? Because the
even as a baptized 9-year-old, I don't think anybody cares if a kid's walking around.
I don't think anybody does, but the dress. Well, that's the point. They are saying that these articles in The Friend are clearly, they tell these true stories of kids who were going to go and buy a shirt, and then they're like, no, I couldn't do it because of the sleeves or what have you. And that might be fine if that's your personal choice, but it's a fine debate, I think, between whether you should, do we need to instill values in the young even though they're not accountable because it's important for later in life? Or is it shame on us for trying to assume that because of modesty, we argue, is what drives the carnality of men, that doesn't apply to children, so who are we to sit there and try to be so stupid about it? Those are the two arguments.
Where do you stand on this argument, Jeff?
I honestly don't know, and I think my opinion would change a lot once I had my own kids. I'm not personally offended by any means. I mean, I teach 4-year-olds in primary.
Is there any value in setting this precedent where out of the womb you never put your child in anything but modest clothes?
I think as long as the standard is in front of them, this is just my opinion, that of course you dress more modestly as you mature. I think that's what's most important. But I think for young prepubescent girls, it's true. That's the question, though. Where is the line? So that's why many would feel more comfortable simply stressing that, no, my daughter dresses just as modestly as she would if she'd been through the temple, even though she's 3.
And so there are people close to me who have raised their children and never enforced the modesty issue, and I feel like. I feel like their children had a harder go through college at figuring out through high school, at figuring out where their line is.
Exactly, right? Exactly, and that's the risk you run. Of course, I think that's.
Meanwhile, the other ones that are very good at that modesty issue have trouble figuring out that is not like the all-encompassing principle of Jesus, and
exactly.
And also, I mean, like. Like, I feel like it's hard for some people to sort of just be themselves and not, like, be identified by the modesty principle. It's the same as, like, you can sort of let the immodesty piece overtake you, and you're identified by how slutty you are, or how schmuckish
right.
you dress. I feel like the same goes for, oftentimes, the very stout religious families that are, you know, almost to the point of, like, they identify themselves by how afraid of the sun they are.
Yeah, and we can't be too pharisaical about stuff. That's where we run into problems, like anything.
I mean, so this goes back to the principle, though, I guess, of, like, what is the principle here? And what is the principle that we are teaching by teaching modesty and encouraging our children to live modestly and dress modestly? Like, the principle is that you respect your body, right? That you respect your, who you are, and you don't feel like you have to dress in a very sexy way or anything like that in order to be valued as a person, right?
Yes. And I think, personally, I think if those things are stressed more in the real development years of teenagedom and stuff, that's where we need to look out for such things. Because before that, kids are innocent, and it doesn't matter. I mean...
Well, they are innocent, and I guess what I'm saying is just parents don't use modesty as a crutch, right? Like,
yeah.
help your kids be confident in themselves and be, you know, believe in who they are and understand their own worth. And the modesty will reflect that, not the other way around. Just because you put a sheet over your kid doesn't mean that they're going to understand who they are and value themselves.
Perfectly
and so.
Perfect.
This jibber jabber about little kids and all that stuff. I mean, it's a non-issue. It's silly.
It is, but perfectly said. I think that's the point. If we believe in our inner value, we will demonstrate that with our outward.
Here.
So, folks, find us at thisweekinmormons.com. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com.
Also, email us at contact@thisweekinmormons. Did you just say that? I feel like you just said that.
I feel like I just said that. I was leaning for you to do the social media plug.
Oh, yeah. Also, facebook.com/thisweekinmormons and twitter.com/therealtwim.
and Stitcher Radio, YouTube, iTunes,
podcast, TV,
make our brand grow so that we benefit personally, financially, and spiritually.
Yeah, we love all those things.
Thank you very much. So that will be the case. Al, I'm going to let you close out the show this week. So I'm going to say thanks, everyone, and I'm going to let you sign off.
For Mr. Bye, Jeff, everyone. I'm Bye. Al. Thanks for joining us this week, people, on This Week in Mormons, the show where everything's made up and the points don't matter. That's right, the points are like Alanis Morissette's more meaningful songs. Is that uninvited? Did we go back to uninvited?
All right, I'm leaving now.
All right, see you, Jeff.
Bye.